The reality is that we're safe when we're competent and skilled at what we do. We're safe because we go out and train, we go out, we know our crew's capabilities, we know our personal capabilities and limitations. I think those are the things that truly make a fire ground safe.
This is Code 3, the Firefighters Podcast, hosted by award-winning journalist Scott Orr. Now, here's Scott.
That's right, and I will not let Parkinson stop me. Thank you for joining me today for another edition of Code 3. This is the show that gives you all the information on a firefighting topic you need in about 20 minutes. Let's get started. There's a constant battle being waged between firefighters who believe that safety on the fire ground precludes aggressive tactics. The opposite is also true. So what's the compromise between the two? It seems as if firefighters don't believe that it's possible to be both aggressive and safe. It is, of course, possible, and my guest today is here to offer some suggestions about how you can implement both. He's no wimp. He puts Mrs. Smith's safety first, his crew's second, and his own personal safety third. Ryan Selleck is a captain at the City of Pasco Fire Department in Washington State. He is the co-owner of Young Officers on Fire, which puts on annual conferences, trainings, and manages a national nonprofit mentorship group. Ryan Selleck joins me now. Welcome to Code 3.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
It's great to have you here. So the battle between aggressive firefighting and safe firefighting has gone on for years, although it does seem to be generational. Members who've been on the job for decades sometimes equate safety to wimpiness. Can firefighting be safe and aggressive at the same time?
You know, I absolutely believe it can be. I think that a lot of organizations opt for low-hanging fruit, which is things that can be signs posted on walls, policy changes, the things that really I don't believe. I mean, sometimes policies can make us safer, but the reality is that we're safe when we're competent and skilled at what we do. We're safe because we go out and train, we go out, we know our crew's capabilities, we know our personal capabilities and limitations. I think those are the things that truly make a fire ground safe. And I think the fire service has a bad habit and a bad history of oversimplifying safety. And I think we're applying it in the wrong places.
When you say applying in the wrong places, do you mean the simple low-hanging fruit like signs and things like that? Or what are you referring to?
I do. So, and that's one of the ways. I think the other way that what I've seen is this misalignment, I think, where a lot of organizations and people, individuals, have put a priority on incident safety. And I think that's a deviation from our mission. And I think that we have taken away some of, well, I'd say what most of us really got into the job for is to go and to help people. And when you start telling firefighters that they're the primary concern on the fire ground and that we are going to put firefighter safety above the people that we swore to protect, you've taken that mission from them. And then I think the place where we do need safety is psychological safety in the workplace, where we can have difficult conversations, we can fail, we can be afraid to, or not be afraid to be vulnerable and say, hey, I don't know this. And so I think those two things, when we flip them, we really get into an organizational misalignment where we're not there serving our purpose. And then in the firehouse or on the training ground, we don't have the safety to make critical decisions because we're afraid that we're going to be in trouble, or we've said the wrong thing, we've done the wrong thing, and it's not going to align with the people above us. And so I think that really puts us in a problem. It challenges us in the fire service.
Well, yeah, because I mean, risk taking is part and parcel of this job, isn't it?
Absolutely. I know because the data supports it. We when we look at, and this kind of, I guess, gets down to the foundational piece for me when we start talking about data, is that if you look back when we started tracking home fires, so in the 70s, we started tracking home fire data. And so that was considered the end of the war years, the highest fire volume, America burning, the worst time in American history for fires. And so since then, our fire volume has drastically dropped. However, when you actually compare the number of fatalities, which was higher in the 60s, but when you compare it to fatalities per fire, it's actually within a 10th of a percent less. So you are as likely to die if you have a fire in your home today than you were in 1977. And that, for me, is a stark reality of all of the improvements that we have over the firefighters that served, you know, 40 years ago. And that now you're far less likely to have a fire in your home. But if you do, basically, you have the same statistical likelihood of it being fatal. That, to me, is a black eye on the fire service. And I think it really comes back to this mindset of a risk-averse fire ground.
How can a department as a whole instill a culture of aggressive safety into its DNA?
So I think it doesn't matter if you're an organization, if you're a battalion, or if you're a company officer or company in general, is that you have to identify your why. And you have to, if we're talking organizationally, we have to identify what our values are and what our why is. And so when we do that, and it should generally be in the realm of to serve people. And if we do that, we follow that up with all the things, like I said, with training and, you know, investing in our people, investing in knowledge, investing in, you know, we have a lot of young firefighters coming in, making sure that they're coming through the early time in their career the correct way. And I think if we do that, you would see a much higher morale. And then you pair that with the psychological safety of an organization saying that, hey, every individual has a sandbox that they're allowed to make decisions. And you may not always make the right decisions. And if you don't, then we're going to have that conversation. But you should be allowed and should know exactly what the sandbox is. And from the rookie to the senior guy, to the lieutenant, to the captain of the battalion, to the deputy chiefs, everybody should have a sandbox that they know these are the decisions that are within that sandbox that I can make. And then you couple that with a commander's intent, i.e. the fire chief says, hey, my expectation is that we are going to risk a lot to save a lot, which is like one of the most common things in the fire service. But sometimes that's said and then not followed through. So if you're a fire chief and you're saying risk a lot to save a lot, that means that if I need to vent or search, or I need to be on a roof to vent, or I need to do waterless search, that the crews are going to do that and they're going to make that decision.
So you're saying these principles can be implemented on a company level and the entire department doesn't have to agree to them?
It makes it a lot easier when you have organizational alignment from, you know, the rookie to the fire chief. And when the rookie knows what the commander's intent is of the fire chief, it's a good place to be. But even, you know, going down to the battalion level, if I know what my battalion chief expects of me as a company officer, and I know what's in my purview of decisions to make, that leaves me a lot of ability to make good decisions at the time. You know, Jocko calls it decentralized command. And I think that even translates down as a company officer, all my people have a sandbox and they know what's within their decision-making area. And I have a high expectation that they're going to make critical decisions without me being there. They know what my expectation is. They know through our training and through, you know, drilling and all the conversations that we have, I have no question they know what I would expect, and all of our values align around our mission. And so they really don't need me there to micromanage them. So I think when you have that from the rookie to the fire chief, it's far more successful. But I think at every level, we should be implementing that.
Can you put into words what you expect?
Yeah, I think for my crew, we get together annually and we set the expectations of the company, which is a multi-page document stemming from what our training expectations are of each other, what our expectations are for gathering on and off duty, you know, what PPE expectations are. So that's really granular. But I finished that with a commander's intent, which is a couple of, very simple things like if you are making a decision and if it's something that's not directly going against policy, but it's a gray area, always make the decision that's going to be of service to our people, and I'll back you 100%. And if it does violate policy, but it's the right thing to do, then do it, and I'll back you 100%. And so I think just having that alone really gives people the flexibility to do what's right at the right time, because we can't write a policy for all of the things that we have to make decisions on that we see is just so vast. We try to, make a policy for everything, and the reality is you just end up having people make bad decisions because there isn't an answer for every question that's written down. So
Now, is there ever a time when you'd advocate placing safety second to getting the job done, say making a rescue from a structure fire? Would that be an example?
absolutely. Yeah, to me, so I'm a big believer in citizens are my first priority, my crew is my second priority, and my own personal safety is my last priority. And I think if everybody thinks that way, if everybody's putting each other ahead of themselves, which I think intuitively has been the history of the fire service. And when you listen to guys like Jeff Kuhl, who run Black Sunday, and they talk about who gets the rope for the bailout, that's in our DNA as firefighters. And I think that when we take that away and start putting ourselves first, it really creates bad culture, and it just doesn't fit with our operational mindset.
Sounds like what you're talking about is empowerment. You're saying that you're empowering people to make their own decisions as long as they make smart decisions.
100%. I think as a leader, if you don't do that, you're going to end up on the wrong side of some of your own decisions. I think that everybody should be empowered from the rookie up. Our rookies, we teach them from recruit school to be thinking firefighters, and we expect that our rookies can go up to a window, look at the window, decide if it's a window that they, sorry, I'm talking vendor search operations. So they look at a window, they identify all of the things that would make it a go situation from the outside. They take the window, they make a secondary assessment once the window's taken, and then they go in and they do a vendor search, and then they make an assessment of going beyond the door. And all that is expectation of a 21-year-old rookie. And that's because we've given them the tools and the skills to make those decisions. So I think, when you do that, if you have a workforce where every single person has that decision-making power and they believe in the mission, you're going to have a very high functioning team. And I talk a lot about when I teach on culture, Maslow's hierarchy, and that's the self-actualization, the fifth level. And I think it's rare in the fire service. I think most firefighters, especially, having, we do a national mentorship program. I get to talk to people all over the country, and morale is not good. And I think that most people are probably in the first to second level of Maslow's hierarchy. They're basically coming to work. They're afraid that they're going to get in trouble for doing different things, and they just don't have an alignment with their organizational mission.
So you're saying that morale is down overall across the board?
From my experience, yeah, I've been in the fire service for just over 23 years, and I've never seen morale like I have in the last few. And I think some of that is definitely following COVID and some of the things that divided us during COVID. And there's a lot of things. I mean, we could talk for an hour on all the things that I think are affecting morale, but overall, I mean, I'll bump into firefighters sometimes, and when they leave, I feel like saying, "Hey, don't jump out of the window. It's not that bad. It's going to get better." And that's just not something I ever experienced in my career. But it's not local, it's not regional. It's firefighters from across the country, and I think a lot of it is a misalignment in mission and what we're actually doing operationally.
I'm thinking though of that phrase, if I'm injured, I can't help anyone.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that doesn't mean be reckless. And, this conversation definitely is, it's an in-depth conversation, because now if you're a young guy and, the easy thing is to get a young guy all fired up to run through a wall and be a reckless cowboy. And that's just not what I think the majority of us are advocating for. It's again, it goes back to being highly trained, highly, sorry, have a high understanding of the environment, knowing the data, knowing fire dynamics, understanding everything that you can about the fire ground, and then applying that in an aggressive way. I think it makes us safer. So never put yourself, in a place where you're going to get hurt, and then the team is going to have to take care of you. That's not the right mindset. But as far as like, if we've got a rope and I've got three of us that need to get out of a building, it's going to be the victim, my firefighter, and me last. And that's just how I feel it should be as a leader.
Okay, I want to give you an opportunity to talk for a moment about Young Officers on Fire. What is that all about?
Yeah, so it started about 6 years ago, just with a simple Facebook page. And it was just kind of, I had come out of the training vision, went back to shift life, and I was just trying to get some thoughts out there and just kind of get some dialogue on things that I was trying and things that were going right and things that were going wrong. I brought a buddy, Rob Fisher. He's a battalion chief over on, in the Seattle area, just retired, but I brought him on. We started doing a national mentorship program, which is a free program. And then we started doing some fire conferences to kind of bring those people in the mentorship program together. And so this is our third year of doing fire conferences, Spokane, Washington. It was formerly Ride in the Right Seat Conference, and now it's called the West Coast Leadership Conference. And we travel and do some training on company officer and culture.
Sounds great.
Yeah, I mean, that's really been our passion is there's a lot of young leaders, and we want to, everything that we talked about today, we want to foster an environment where we can have those conversations. And part of our conferences is bringing in some of the best people from around the country, people who are doing a lot of call volume and have a lot of experience and a lot of expertise in their areas. And so bringing those people in so young firefighters and young officers can learn from them, because we just don't have that kind of experience in our region of the country.
All right, we'll leave it right there. Ryan Sully, thanks for talking with me today on Code 3.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
And there is more about aggressive safety on our website, code3podcast.com/aggressive safety. Take a look. Time for a minor boast. Code 3 has been named number 45 on FeedPost's list of 70 best podcasts under 20 minutes. A little recognition never hurts. And if you like what you heard this week, don't miss the next one. I send out an email to alert listeners of new episodes. Just click on the link at the top of the webpage to sign up. And no, I never sell or give away your email address, so you get no spam. You can also subscribe to the podcast on whichever app you use to listen. Either way, you'll never miss an episode. All right, that's it. That's all for this edition of Code 3. Thank you for listening. I'll be back next time with more, and I hope you'll join me then. I'm Scott Orr, and until then, stay safe.
To contact us, get more information on today's show, or to subscribe to the podcast, go to code3podcast.com.